Okay, Monster Hash. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox on KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. And we do love you. We got a fun drive coming up, so we need to see your love, too, so you keep us on the air. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store, Pono Pies, and and you. Yes, and mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio last fun drive. We exceeded our goal, and that was really nice. Love you all. Love you all. Hey, and those of you who listen to little troublemaking shows like this one, if it makes a difference in your life, you know, help keep us on the air. This is all volunteer run and listener supported. And today, which is Discoverer's Day show, or Discovered Day, whether you were a discoverer, depending upon which side of the end of that you want to say you were on, we're going to have a range of topics. And Marshall, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Felicia. A little bit out of breath from my mad dash to the car for my mate. You want some?
In a minute.
All right.
Okay, so one thing, I'm just going to share a little bit about what we've got going on in the show. First half of the show, we've got a whole range of topics, but I did want to start with some acknowledgement of these fires and floods that are going on. And in the second half of the show, maybe approaching that second half of the show, we are going to look again at something that we've been addressing a little bit more here, which is like our high incarceration rate and social equity issues. And we have a guest in the second half, the first part of the second half, and that is Chaplain Clayton Chu. He is the chaplain for Kauai Community Correctional Center. Mm-hmm. So we'll be hearing a little bit of stuff. I always like to go to the source, and it's a heartfelt source from within our correctional center, our jail.
I'm so glad you're bringing up those issues of social injustice. Felicia, I'm so glad we can count on you, really. You know, there you are, like, waving the bound volume of evidence of how we just are not doing so well in terms of our incarceration strategies, say, or...
Yeah, I'm not sure how we got to where we're at. I know, in general, I have really adopted a new policy of trying to solve problems without having to make anybody wrong.
Right.
But, you know, this is a problem we want to solve because we have so many people that are in jail, and most of them haven't really done much other than maybe not having their life together or being poor, you know, and the extension of that. So I just do want to acknowledge both the floods in Costa Rica and the fires in California. There's been fires and floods everywhere, but have you been following it much?
You know, actually, Felicia, not. I've been just so busy. And so when you pointed that out to me today, and I did,
you looked at it a little bit?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wow.
Tragic. I mean, last that I looked at, there were 15 deaths in Northern California, but also, you know, looks like 20,000 buildings have been burned. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, burning through these neighborhoods, burning through all these fires, these beautiful areas, even if they weren't beautiful.
Well, you know what, actually, I was hearing today on NPR is that many of the areas are actually where the workers of the agricultural concerns there, the vineries and such, a lot of them migrant workers, lived in actually very poorly constructed dwellings that were part of the problem, really. These flames came quickly, and the places they were living had no chance. And so this has disproportionately affected the most vulnerable populations, including the homeless.
Mm.
It's truly, truly tragic.
I have to correct one thing I said. It's not 20,000 buildings burned. It's 20,000 within the evacuation zones. But I know thousands have burned, including houses. And yes, typically these things tend to hurt those least able to deal with it. I did have a friend's dad shared something. He's in his 90s. Excuse me, his 80s. Sorry, Don. This is Don, and let's see, where is he at? He's from Crown Hill in Fountain Grove Parkway in Sonoma. And so he shared a couple of things that he learned, because he was really lucky to survive. And he sleeps with his phone basically with the ringer off and just the flashing light. Mm-hmm. And his neighbors were calling and calling and mm-hmm. calling him, but he didn't hear it. Fortunately, he had to get up and go to the restroom. So he saw the light going off, but they had been calling, and they said, for about an hour. And he just raced out, you know, without bringing anything with him, anything, just got in the car and just got out and barely got out. So had he not had the phone, he would have burned. And what was also really important to him is he says he will never leave it on silent again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that if he even had it on buzz, you know, buzz or ring, then he would have heard, you know, that piece.
And you know what, it's a dilemma, right? Because I feel the same way. There are calls that I want to come through day or night. And how do you deal with that? If your phone's going to ring when who knows what calls, you know, some robocall calls in the middle of the night. But there are some settings you can set there, like, you know,
your favorites. You could put your favorites on or something.
Certain numbers that will be able to reach you when Do Not Disturb is on.
Mm-hmm. But you have to be very conscious of it. I don't turn mine off. Because I'm a mother, so I'm always going to want to be available if something happens to my kids. But
I just thought you were awake 24 hours a day.
So another thing that was shared by this person, Don, that I think was very important is that, you know, he had backed up and digitized his photographs and, you know, had gotten all of them digitized that were so meaningful for him, and his computer burned. They weren't on the iCloud. They weren't on the cloud.
Mm.
So he recommends that people put it on the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so a lot of heavy things with that. Do you have friends in that area?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No.
I don't really personally have too many. I know there are some people from this community who have a lot up there, and some people who've had, you know, family homes burned down.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, Jake.
How are you guys doing?
Really good.
Good.
Do you have friends up in that area? The Sonoma, Napa, you know, we have really huge fires that are just going so fast. And I want to give a shout out to Kauai's Emergency Management System that puts out a call or a ring if we're expecting a problem.
That's right, the automated alert system.
Mm-hmm. But I guess in a lot of this area they didn't have that. So people didn't know. They went to bed and they woke up with a very serious and fast fire burning.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody wants to call in and share on this, 826-7771, I just don't want to be moving past so quickly when there are these huge issues between Puerto Rico and Texas and Florida and all those islands in the Caribbean. And then we have Mexico, and basically, our whole earth is shaken a little bit, and I think there's a lot of reasons for it. Some of it is man-made reasons or reckless behavior with fire in a dry time. But some of it, I think, has to do with all these solar flares. I guess this has been huge peak time, and that does impact. It certainly makes sense that solar flares impact the weather and then the crustal plates and pieces like that, and a lot of these.
Wait a minute.
Solar coronal mass ejections? Absolutely.
Like causing earthquakes, that kind?
When you have solar flares, it impacts the dynamics of the planet. It in fact impacts the electromagnetic field. I mean, I've had science and fun here, and we've talked about that, and it does. It does make a difference. There's solar storms, and it makes a difference. I don't know how deep, but it makes it. I'm not saying it caused the earthquakes.
some kind of vibrational force that has a... Okay.
I mean, it's a piece of science. I mean, you can look at it on Jet Propulsion Laboratories. There's different things. You can look and you can see the solar weather.
Yeah.
And we've had, like, the most intense month in 11 years.
Okay. I guess it just, to me, it seems counterintuitive that solar flares could move such a massive body as a crustal plate. But I suppose...
Well, it can make storms. It can do different things.
Right. Yeah, I'll need to look into it, actually, Felicia. Actually, you've clearly looked at it more closely.
Yeah, well, we had a couple shows on it recently. He's busy answering the phone, so he misses some of that. But we did. We had a couple shows on it. So we had some shows where this was like about a month and a half ago. And so we were talking about it.
Did we end the show with me appearing to be convinced that solar flares caused earthquakes?
I didn't say earthquakes. I made a mistake. I said the solar activity can impact what's going on the planet. And we're in a photon belt. We're in all these different things. We are definitely having...
Oh, the magnetosphere. Absolutely.
Is disrupted, and that impacts things. It's subtle, but it impacts
things. And we don't even know what all it does impact. It very well may have some, if even subtle... effect on the crustal plates. Yeah, we don't even know how things are.
Well, we don't know.
I'm sorry.
On that one.
I don't know.
And
I shouldn't giggle.
And here's the thing: when we have a big crustal plate, like we are in the center of the Ring of Fire, we're lucky we're in the center. But we've had earthquakes all around it, right? We've had so when it has an earthquake on one side, it's really natural that there's going to be an activity on the other side. You can't, you know, shift one big piece of the Earth's skin and not have everything kind of adjust.
Yeah, the subducting and the abducting.
Yeah, so there is a lot of movement going on. And so I've been seeing a lot of that. And then we have had all these multiple emergencies are somewhat exhausting the services. They're really running out of firefighters to be jumping and dealing with all the different fires everywhere.
Right.
It's very intensive. And FEMA... Federal Emergency Management Agency is getting an intensive workout.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's exactly the time that the community emergency response teams are called out, which, you know, in one sense, it's like good to know that, yeah, we can be vital. In the other sense, it's like, whoa, wow, we might be called to help in a situation like that or as dire as that, you know, kind of brace yourself for that as a potential reality.
Yeah, so it's a very serious episodes that are going on, and I think that we need to be prepared. One thing we have been talking about, people probably get tired of the phrase general plan update, but what that is the vision for the island. So I just want to let people know that, again, tomorrow and then on Thursday, the county council will be breaking out these pieces of it. So in the morning... Tomorrow, the planning department, who we had on last week, and I really want to thank them for coming in. I enjoyed that show, and
yeah,
I appreciated that they came in.
And the listeners did, too, obviously. Yeah, the phone was hopping.
Yeah, and you know what I like is it's pretty evident that we're all just people trying to do the right thing, and so it's hard to make sure that you grab every little aspect of each issue, and that's why it's important to have the community be involved and the different parts of the government get involved, but... This week, they are working with growth management and statistics and future land use, which is sort of the jugular of everything. Mm-hmm. So looking at how much do we think we're going to grow, if we're going to let things grow, where is it going to go, and making sure that the numbers that count, like the visitor count, is right, and that we're actually looking at real numbers. And so I'm not putting the Kaheya out for people to go show up at that meeting, but, I mean, that is a very big meeting tomorrow. So how it's going to be working moving forward is the planning department will go in and it'll talk to the council on Wednesday mornings, and then they'll do their regular business on Wednesday afternoon. Then on Thursdays, they're adding an extra day in. They are taking this seriously, and then they will take public testimony. You can do it on Wednesday, too, but on Thursday is really going to be what's called a workshop. And so if people have a lot of thoughts on this, it's good to organize them in advance as much as you can, because the council, they aren't a planning department, you know. So, but on Thursday, they will be working on it as well. I also noticed that the short-range transit plan is out, and I posted that on my Facebook wall, Felicia Olanji Cowden, and it's a huge document.
Give us a little context for that. What's the background?
Well, that shows, you know, where they're going to do the funding, where they're going to be putting roads, where they want to do some development, where they're going to be doing some fixing. It just came out, so I haven't had a chance to read that, like, 200-page document with a lot of depth at this point. I've glanced through it.
Yeah.
But when people are concerned about traffic, that's a big piece of that issue.
What is the purpose of it, of this plan, of this report?
That's how we're going to change our roads, what we're going to do. Like, we always have to keep reevaluating. You know, you think you got a good plan, and then there's more, you know, more houses get built, or, you know, there's a problem here or there, or, you know. So it looks at where we're going to be moving our cars, where we're going to be putting more parking lots, where we're going to be widening roads, where we're going to be putting traffic lights, how we're going to be fixing those traffic lights. And everything costs money.
Mm-hmm.
Everything costs money. And I meant to ask either Mel Raposo or Bernard Cavaglio if they could call in or come in. So I'll try and get that sometime in the near future. Last Wednesday and Tuesday, they went to San Francisco because we had to, a couple weeks ago, we're looking at getting another $25 million bond, which is really a drag because that's like putting that much money on our credit card. So somehow that we have to pay for that, right? So that's why we end up with taxes or different challenges. So they went over there to talk to Moody's and try and get a better bond rating, because a few years back, about 4 years back, maybe three, we lost our premium bond rating. So what that means is kind of like if you're late on your credit card, if you have, say, a 9% interest rate on your credit card, or, you know, you have 6% and you make a mistake, then all of a sudden it goes up to 23%. That's the credit card, not the bonds. But when you have a bond rating change, it is a really huge impact in terms of being able to manage the debt. And I remember in 2006, got to quite remember, like, I used to really pay a lot of attention during Brian Baptiste's time, who was the mayor before Bernard. None of this is being blamed on Bernard, by the way, but when Brian was in there, we had a surplus. We had no debt. So here we are 11 years later, and we've got something like $200 million worth of debt. So this happened to the country, the state. I mean, the country's been out of control on their debt for a long time. But the state and the counties, they don't print money. And we just did this crazy thing of putting $2 billion more. I say it's throwing good money after bad at the rail project. But every one of those things matters, because in the end, we pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And in what form will that come around?
How do we pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
We pay for it in taxes. We pay for it in things like like our water meters went up. It used to be like $4,000 to get a water meter. Now it's like, I think it's something like $15,000 or $16,000. Being on the air with Marshall is like having a pop quiz. So I'm pretty good at all this, though, but we can look it up. I know by the time you put you hire the plumber to help you get that water meter in, people are spending $20,000. You know, it's $20,000 to do that, and you haven't even flushed the toilet yet, you know? I mean, so because you have to put a septic system in, which is also about $20,000. So just to put a toilet on your property is $40,000. You haven't even built a house yet,
yeah,
right?
And you know you could just build it out of bamboo if they'd let you.
If they'd let you, but that's the key. You can't.
Right.
So.
No.
What'd you say?
No can.
So it's kind of a big deal. So when we have things like the short-range transit plan, it's like, where does the money come from? And people will push it or, you know, grab some money from here or from there, but it's stated to be, you know, in the end, we all have to pay for it, whether it is private and we're paying for all this new infrastructure for KIUC, who in many ways are doing a very good job. I know I'm not supposed to give them a good high five, but I give them at least one high five, you know? They do a lot of good things.
Oh, okay. Felicia, don't speak your mind.
Well, you know what? If I say good things about the power company, sometimes I get a lot of a lot of chafe. You know, they say, oh, you carry water for the power company. But power company actually does a lot of good things. We're really moving fast towards, you know, resilient energy, renewable energy. There's some things that, you know, would be nicer if wasn't the case. But anyway, power company, they all this stuff that they're putting in, batteries, water storage tank. I want to do a show on that one because I don't really understand it. It's pumping water up the hill with the solar in the peak sun time. And then the water goes through a little hydro thing after.
You're adding potential energy to the water by elevating its, you know.
Yeah, so at height. Night, so it's a battery, you know, but it's right. Like we have the Elon Musk batteries. What do we call them? Tesla batteries?
Tesla 3s.
But, you know, those could break or, you know, they're going to get old eventually. And this water storage tank, in theory, you know, if the pump doesn't go out, you know, that's a good thing. So whether we're paying a private industry for infrastructure or we're paying the state or we're paying county, we're still paying. So you said, where does it come out? It might come out in car registration. It might come out in gas tax. It might come in general excise tax, property tax, income tax, licensing fees, permits for fishing or putting a building up or, you know, picking up your trash, your water bill.
And how much of that in general is going to be paying off the capital, and how much is that just going to be maintaining the
debt service?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an excellent question. And before I answer that, like I know what it was like maybe a year ago. And a year ago, we were reaching a point where it was getting really nerve-wracking. Really nerve-wracking on being able to pay for that. And so when you ask these questions, these are important questions for anybody to be asking and to be thinking about, because it's really easy to get angry at our political leaders. And I always feel bad when I see people trashing them. I saw Derek Kawakami announced his mayoral run last Thursday, and it was like, you know, a nice article on it. And I knew before I even read the comments. There were 6 comments. 1 was nice, 5 was mean, you know. It's like people got to throw rocks. As soon as you start to run, you know, there's a lot of people who can be pretty hard on you. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't be held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice if at least they're being held accountable. It's being held accountable for something real.
Mm-hmm.
And state the facts instead of, you know, slam the person.
Mm-hmm.
Is generally what I like to see happen.
And understand that they're under incredible budgetary pressure, I guess.
They're under incredible budgetary pressure. And I think that one thing that doesn't really get reported well enough, or people don't seem to grasp well enough, is we shove a lot of our financial burden onto the wealthy that don't live here. So that would be like taxation without representation. People say, great, you know, they should be paying for it, even if they are non-resident investors and they've got an expensive mansion on the beach. Great, we can knock them up for $140,000 a year. I mean, the bills are that high. They're mm-hmm. really high. And, you know, they don't hardly use services because they don't even live here, right? These houses, you don't vacation rent, you know, a $40 million, $70 million estate. You don't vacation rent it. You can't make that kind of money. So it just sits there. So it can be looked at as a cash cow, and we can certainly find ways to see it as a problem. The thing is that when that is how we pay for our government, guess what they're going to want, and guess what they're going to need,
mm-hmm.
is more big rich things like that. So if they can get $140,000 a year out of something that really takes very little services from the county, as opposed to, you know, another house that might pay $1,000 a year and takes a number of services.
How much? $140,000 they might get from the human services given to people on this island in need. How many people would it take before it adds up to $140,000? And with that land and that infrastructure, could you house and feed all those people for less than that?
No.
No. Okay.
Yeah. I think that we have a caller. We're going to take that call. But, yeah, so we have to be really conscious about, you know, what we ask for, because if we ask to shovel all the costs onto the visitors and onto the non-resident investors, we're going to end up with visitors and non-resident investors, because that's how you have to do the bottom line in what works.
I think another thing, too, is being really cautious on how we spend the money and where it's spent, and making sure that it's spent wisely. For example, with the rail project going on Oahu, if we were to take that money and put it into other things, how many people could we help with that kind of money? And for example, like the bus stops over here on Kauai, I know those were pretty pricey for what they really are.
$40,000 apiece.
Yeah, that seems.
The bus shelters.
Yeah, the bus shelters. That seems extremely high to me.
The people passing that, like the council, they are pretty much extorted into it by laws above. Yeah.
And I was also kind of curious if there's a way where members of the community could kind of either donate their time or materials to build things like that. I've looked into it before, mm-hmm. Because it really wouldn't take much.
That's called like a public-private partnership, and the Lions Club have definitely made some really nice cinder block bus shelters, and it blocks both the rain and the wind, and I think it costs them between $5,000 and $10,000 to put them in, and they're certainly, in my opinion, a superior bus shelter.
Yeah, I think we need to look at some things like that, just how we spend the money, you know, because it's inevitable we're going to have to pay these things off, and then when you're looking at the interest rates and stuff on top of that, it gets pretty hard for a small little community like Kauai to be able to foot these bills.
I think an extra piece that's hard is that it's like about 70,000 people stretched out along 100 miles, so we don't have the concentration of infrastructure the way it would be if that 70,000 was in a small town. Marshall, did that caller have something they wanted to say?
Up there. The caller just wanted to speak to me. And that can be difficult, you know.
Yeah, that is difficult.
In the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
but they
didn't
have a point for the listener.
You know, I don't know. I couldn't concentrate. I can't, you know, it's hard to listen and a concise comment or question is really what I need. I'm so happy to do that. Take a question or a comment concisely, but I can't have a long conversation.
Right. Yeah. So, listener, we care about what you think, but yes, and then it kind of is hard on the whole flow of the show because we're all in here trying to work on it. So you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia, Marshall, and Jake with Kauai Soapbox, the station that loves you. Hey, I have had a whole flurry of information. There is a film playing tonight at Waimea. It is called Food Evolution. I looked at the production company. I mean, no, who paid for it? You know, it's definitely the industry, the seed industry, the biotech industry who paid for the film. But they're doing their side of the story. And what works, I think I've seen some of the little pieces of it, definitely mocking the protesters. In all fairness, I would say the shows that are looking at the concerned citizen side, they probably really show a lot of the protest, giving, you know, that point of view. So I pulled a piece of sound from a film that I like the best out of all these seed films. It is called Open Sesame, and it's called The Story of Seeds. It goes a little bit on, when they came to Kauai, they talked about the community resistance to the pesticides. But for the most part, what this film did is it went around the world in all different parts of everywhere and talked about regionally developed seeds, which is what was the case everywhere. We had so much diversity of broccoli or corn, or, you know, like there's something like 300 types of cacao, you know, because it's where it evolves in each little area. And so what happens when corporations take over the seed production, even if we didn't worry about the genetics that went in there, if there is about 7 or 8 varieties of corn instead of hundreds of varieties of corn or hundreds of varieties of potatoes. And really, when potatoes are grown specifically for McDonald's so that they will be perfect for French fries, we have that. But I did put this little clip in here. I wonder if I can play it right. Let's see. And this is from this film called Open Sesame.
It's a start.
In the past 100 years, roughly 90% of our vegetable varieties have gone extinct.
It is a silent global crisis.
Without seeds, nothing else would exist.
And once the diversity is lost, we can't get it back.
Why is the Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission turning a blind eye to this monopoly that's happening within the seed industry? I mean, this is a seed crisis of epic proportions.
And I think this particular film does such a really good job of looking at how much work goes in to holding seeds if they aren't being used all over the place. If everybody's using the seeds, and then there's as many types of seeds as there are farmers. And when you allow your crop to go through to seed and you plant from it the next time, you're going to get regionally adapted seeds that work. And so when we have such a narrow range of seeds, and most of these seeds that we are creating, they don't reproduce. So you have to buy your next year's group of seeds. And that's a very, very difficult thing for our community. So, I mean, people might go and see Food Evolution. I'm sure they're going to give a strong argument of why the people who make the seeds feel that they do a good job on it, and it's fair for them to do that. But I'm just putting that little piece out there, is that, you know, we need to have the diversity. And it's not like they can change their mind and 40 years later decide, okay, let's go back to the way it was, because it won't be possible.
Right. Yeah, it makes it really difficult if a farmer can't save their seed and has to buy them every year. And tragically, it's a cause of a rash of suicides among farmers in India. People just faced with the inability to grow the next year's crops, being unable to afford it, and maybe their crop failed, whatever. But it is... what is it?
Well, yes. I mean, that is...
yeah. So that's probably covered in that film. When is that?
Tonight.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just got a text from Don, the one who... his computer burned and everything, the whole house, everything totally gone.
Oh.
So we're sorry about that. Everything is gone. But you know what? They are alive. So that is wonderful that they are alive. So we're thankful that they're alive. And we're thankful that we live in a country and a place that is going to be... solid enough that we can, for the most part... help each other out, you know. There'll be people who will come to help those who have lost, you know. We've got an early bird promotion for people who want to help with our fund drive. Let's hear about it.
KKCR's fall fund drive will begin on November 2nd. Starting now, you are invited to make a tax-deductible donation to KKCR, which will automatically enter you into our early bird drawing. The early bird drawing winner will win a 2-night stay at the majestic Hanalei Bay Resort in Princeville. Mahalo nui to the Hanalei Bay Resort for their generous donation to our early bird drawing winner and for supporting Kauai Community Radio. KKCR is volunteer-driven and listener-supported. We depend on your support to stay on the air. Our goal for this drive is $60,000. Help us get there by making a sustaining or a one-time donation today. For more information on the Early Bird Drawing Prize and to donate securely online, visit kkcr.org or call us at 826-7774.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. I want to shift a little bit into some of what we've been talking about at a larger level with the incarceration elements. And Blue Dukes, who has come on the show before, but she was one of the people who really got the challenge of the incarceration issues and sometimes deaths in prison to my attention. And I want to play a song that she wrote, and we're going to play that, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what is going on with our heavy incarcerations. Learning how to use the... There we go.
They shovel
bread of Christmas tree. They give him a cell that is cold, gray, and hard. Life of an inmate's the only job he's ever had. And now we've all been one way or another. We all have our stories, eh, sister? Yes, we all pay the price. Well, the powers get rich. This pipeline of prison has condemned us to this. That's Blue Dukes and her song Pipeline to Prison, and singing that about a family member. And we see that a lot. And then these kids are half Hawaiian in that family, but tragedy happening in the family that puts the kids into the foster system. Not picking on foster parents, but it doesn't always suit people well, especially if there's a lot of movement. And so people can oftentimes end up incarcerated about 18, as soon as they're old enough to be incarcerated. Jake, you grew up in this community. You probably see that.
Yeah, I've definitely seen people being incarcerated from a young age just because family problems and things like that. And it's definitely something that's plagued the island for quite a while as far as I've seen it.
One thing I see with drug abuse, because very often drug abuse, illegal drug abuse, feathers into this. And when I talk to people, I'll just ask them, oh, you know, why did you start using? And what seems to come up for me when I ask people very, very commonly is grief. Mm. Grief, you know, people have lost a parent, a sibling, gotten divorced, a broken heart, really. How about you, Jake? Have you seen much of that, or like, do you see much going on that, that you might have insights from?
Yeah, I've definitely seen some of that from broken homes, children being abused either by parents or family members, and then also too being if parents are incarcerated for things, and then the children get put into the system in foster care. And I know there's a bunch of great foster parents out there.
Yeah.
However, not all of them are so great, and they can have a really damaging effect on these young people's lives, which then just keeps going downhill. So yeah, it's definitely kind of hard.
Yeah. I regularly have opportunity to be speaking to people who are on the front end of this challenge, or right in the crisis of the challenge. And very often too, what I will see is repeated tickets, basically chasing people out of a neighborhood. Maybe somebody complains, hey, they don't like this like houseless person who's sleeping in their truck or whatever, and they're nervous about them. And I will see the same set of tickets issued 3 or 4 days in a row. And so then the people have 8 or 9, 10 tickets, you know, and it's very, very difficult to even be able to financially manage those tickets, and it's, they can't move the truck to fix the problem. I mean, it seems like maybe officers are expected to harass people out of neighborhoods, and that happens, and they get harassed out of the public spaces. When we have shared spaces, that's another piece, like looking in the general plan update, we not only have social equity, but we have shared spaces, and there's not very many places to go. I know just last weekend I was walking along the edge of the beach, and I actually saw human feces along the shoreline there too, and that's not something I see very often. And I'm thinking, okay, somebody has nowhere to go or nowhere to be. And there's a lot of impacts when pushing people out of housing, pushing people out of where they can be. And, you know, we have to figure out a way. I mean, I actually have a lot of ideas on how we can. I'd like to see, for example, infill in the commercial spaces that we have. We have so many shopping centers that are half empty, warehouses. I've seen examples of successes in other cities where they, you know, partner with something like Habitat for Humanity and the Marriott or, you know, something like that, and they can make these little micro units. And it's infill in what's already there. And most of the time, the people that are pushed out of housing, then they fall into despair and into difficult behavior. If they have a stable place to be and stay clean and just get a good night's sleep and live, not like it's you got to be in it, get out by 7 in the morning and you can get in by 7 at night. And I mean, we're lucky to have what we do have in Lihue, but if you live in some of the other areas out and you can't leave your things there, it'd be a lot cheaper just to be housing in micro units than housing in the prisons.
Hmm.
Let's check to see if we have a call, if they want to go right on the air. Otherwise, I'm going to try and play Blue's testimony before the general plan update in the commission and in the county council. I mean, so she had done a good testimony, and I think that this is stuff that people need to be hearing and seeing. Do we have a caller for the air? No. All right. And so if people want to call in, you can call in at 826-7771. And I'm going to try and play. Oh, my golly. I want to play this testimony. It's Blue. Let me see if I can get it to come up loud enough. And because I think that, you know, it's good for us to all be present and hearing what gets shared. Okay, I might have to come back to that in a minute.
You know, another thing with the housing, too, I think a lot of times, I mean, everybody in life, we go through our ups and downs, and sometimes people just need a little support and a little encouragement, and, you know, that can go a real long way. And it's not, a lot of these people have just come across hard times or different circumstances, and I think as individual communities, if we could be a little bit more compassionate and understanding and deal with the housing issue in a way that helped people as opposed to kick them while they're down. Because let's say a person loses their home and they're living in their vehicle and they're not working, their safety check expires, they get a couple tickets, they can't pay those. Next thing you know, they're incarcerated and where we end up paying for that anyway.
Right. I mean, and when we're looking at a cost between $51,000 and $60,000 a year to incarcerate people, it's a whole lot cheaper to, even if like $1,000 a month is being paid and helping them stay in an affordable unit. And even if it's a micro unit, we can create something like that. And we would be able to be saving money and saving our community. And it's not just the person who gets incarcerated that hurts. It's the whole generations.
All right, Felicia, we had a caller who wanted to mention that another common cause for drug use is prescription drugs.
Yes.
People get started taking prescriptions, and then it just gets out of hand, amphetamines, opioids.
Yes, I want to agree with that. And then as a substitute teacher, I will say I have seen plenty of 7-year-olds on Ritalin. Not tons and tons, but enough. They put kids on Ritalin. I see people in high school, in college, on Adderall. And that's basically, both of those are amphetamines. So if you are prescribing kids to be on amphetamines while they are in school, it's not surprising that they might choose methamphetamines at a street level when they have to moderate their behavior on when they're out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and certainly the painkillers, OxyContin.
the second caller actually wanted to say that we have a really good show and we deal with important topics. Wanted me to pass that on. So thank you. Thank you, caller. We try.
Yes, and I appreciate if people call in at 826-7771 and even go on the air. So I'm going to try and play Blue's testimony and see if I can make it come up loud enough. Right here.
I am asking you on the council to consider the plight of the incarcerated by providing him with restorative justice and remedial rehabilitation. These are the sons and daughters of Hawaii. These are our families. They are not subhuman to be stuffed in overcrowded cells, shipped around like furniture, and wasting away in inhuman environments that damage their futures. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have a caller, Marshall?
Yes.
No. All right. We've got a couple people calling in, but not quite going on the air. I have another song I want to play, and it is called Park Ranger. And as I mentioned last week, something that I did was go camping with some friends of mine. I mean, I went because I wanted to see my friends. I didn't just do it to experience what it is to be houseless in the county parks, but it was very much what the song I'm going to play called Park Ranger in a minute. But we've got a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. It's Keala.
Hey, Keala.
How's it going today? I just turned on your show and I heard something about housing, and I figured I'd call in.
Okay, perfect. So, yes, you know, we're...
I'm not entirely sure what the content of your show is today, but you mentioned something about living in vehicles and kind of the housing issue, and I just wanted to support that with being able to come up with alternative housing options. Like, we're very focused on finding ways to get people housed and all that. But, you know, living in your vehicle is illegal. And unfortunately, that's the option a lot of people turn to because, you know, it's simple here. I for one, have been someone who's done that. But there's not really very much support. And, you know, there could be simpler solutions. So I just wanted to comment on having alternative, creative ideas as to solving it.
Well, thank you. And putting
a really good option.
Putting it in context for you, too, like one of the things that we've been looking at is our incarceration rates and looking at the demographics of it. And the vast majority of them are nonviolent criminals. And many of it is really examples of poverty. And when I look at the demographics in terms of race and ethnicity, it is disproportionately Hawaiian. By far, it is.
Absolutely.
The Hawaiian community.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and for me, that relates to our, you know, mana'o on living. You know, we had kauhale. We had...
Are you there? Hello?
The phone indicates she's still on the line. I don't know.
Okay. Well, maybe she can call back. Let's take the second caller.
Okay. Let me...
Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Bhavana.
Hi, Bhavana. Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to thank you for the show and for these topics. And I just have one comment, and then I have a question that would maybe help us all. First of all, I do have, you know, people in my personal life as well as my healing practice dealing with addictions, and I do find it's, you know, the bottom line of that issue is that they're just numbing a lot of pain, and they're just really need a lot of love. And so thank you for bringing that up. And I don't know if you mentioned it already, but or if you will later, but if the community wants to get involved, do you have any resources of how people can help? Maybe point us to a website or name some organizations on the air. I'd love to find out.
Okay, thank you so much. There is a number of organizations. I don't have necessarily one focused on today. Who we will be hearing from in just a little bit is a little bit down the pipeline, something called Camp Agape, and that is sort of a really wonderful thing that I just learned about because I've been pushing on this issue. And by the way, you know, I've been talking to our prosecutors and people from the probation office, certainly the mayor and different elected officials. I've been talking with Kauai Economic Opportunity to see if, you know, I'm going to go in and meet with them, see if there isn't some ways that we can help bridge the economic problem where, you know, people go to jail basically for having a flat tire. I mean, that sounds like an, you know, a big exaggeration, but when you follow what brings people into jail, sometimes it is just somehow falling out of capacity to fund their life. So we will be bringing more of those up, and I'm glad that you asked that direct question. And then Camp Agape, I just learned about it because I was talking to Bernard Cavallo, who's our mayor, and he told me about it, so he invited me to go out and check it out.
Brotherly love, right?
That would mean, yeah, like brotherly love or agape. Godly love, agape. And so I saw 8 15 passenger vans of inmates from Kauai went to Camp Naui this weekend for 3 days where inmates got to go camping with their children. You know, so many of these people are parents. And so I signed up to volunteer for that next time. You know, like the way you really learn about what the problem is if you go in and you actually meet the challenge head on. And so who will be calling in a little bit, and probably in about 5 minutes or so, is the chaplain from Kauai Community Correctional Center. And, you know, we'll hear, you know, what he sees a little bit there. And he was a big part of what did this Camp Agape. Like, you know, we want to intervene before people end up in jail. But thank you, and I will make sure that, if not this show, coming up very soon, I'll do one where it's all kinds of groups that people could call in and, you know, or could donate to.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any off your head, Jake, that for donating, for helping with this topic?
No, not off the top of my head
I can't,
now.
You know, it's odd. I can't, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there are some, you know, that take little fragments of it. But for the most part, we kind of shame our prisoners. That's what I find, is that they, you know, you think that somebody's, once they're incarcerated, they're bad people. But I have to say, a lot of them are my friends, you know. I mean, a lot of my friends go to jail. So thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. We'll keep listening.
Okay. Aloha.
Blessings. Aloha. Bye.
Do we have another caller?
Give it a shot. Is she there?
Aloha, are you on the air? Hello?
No, that's the call we lost earlier. Okay.
So we're just about at the top of the hour. I want to tell people that you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox, and Jake, Marshall, and Felicia are in the studio, and right now we are talking about social equity and what we can do about it, and pretty soon we'll be hearing from the chaplain of Kauai Community Correctional Center.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So I think I have some callers holding to go on the air, so I'm going to take that real quick. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Felicia, this is Leslie.
Oh, hi, Leslie.
Hi, Felicia. I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to the latest installment at HawaiianKingdom.org as to where we're at. And the things that you've been talking about fall under the category of pillaging.
So
it's only a half hour of information, but boy, oh boy, could you have had a great show with that knowledge today. So
okay.
Maybe next week.
Well, tell me what it is. Hawaii what?
HawaiianKingdom.org. There's a blog link on the top right.
Okay.
And there was an interview done on the 9th, and they posted it. It's a video, 30 minutes long. You can listen to it while you're driving. You don't have to watch anything. But the information would have been so key on your show today.
Okay. And then have you ever watched, read something? It's called Genealogy of Punishment. I recommend.
No, but share it with me in a private message, and I'll take a look at it.
I will do that, and I want to just tell the listener, Genealogy of Punishment is such an important piece. I'm going to put it on my website, and it talks about the hanging of a king here and how there's been a whole systemic element for well over a century of disproportionate harshness on people of the Hawaiian Kingdom and lineage. So thank you.
Leslie?
You're welcome.
Leslie, did you say HawaiiKingdom.org?
Hawaiian. HawaiiAn. HawaiianKingdom.org.
Okay.
That is the government du jour, Dr. David Kianusai's website. There's a blog link on the top right, and you can get to that current video that's there. And all of the rest of the information is all there. You just need to make yourself aware of it.
The information about what?
Because we keep going around and around, and I got one headache already. You guys, come on, it's there.
Well, I mean, I think that we know that there is historical trauma, and that.
No, I understand that, but
I understand about the annexation
on the show today.
Okay,
I'm talking about the things that you were discussing, and if you avail yourself to the information, it would be very helpful to the next conversation.
Awesome.
About it, because it's all there. All the answers are there. You just need to go check it out.
Right. So I'm looking at it now. Yeah, it looks like some research.
Go to the blog link on the top right and listen to the 30-minute video that was just posted of an interview done on the 9th.
Right.
Pretty current.
On law across the sea.
If you want to know where we're at and why, this is where you go, and this would have answered most of the stuff that you guys covered today.
Yeah, well, I'll watch this tonight. Awesome, thank you.
Okay.
Larson versus
All right.
Thank Hawaiian
you so
Kingdom.
Much.
Okay, thank you. Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. Do we have another caller?
No.
Okay. And probably very soon, it looks like we have a call coming in.
Okay.
I am waiting for my guest caller, who is Clayton Chu. He's our chaplain. Okay. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Felicia. This is Chaplain Clayton Tui.
Okay, thank you so much.
Hi.
Hi. So thank you for calling in. Maybe you can tell the callers, what your history is. And I've just been talking about Camp Agape, which I was just so heartwarmed to see, and that was new for me. Bernard Cavallo called that to my attention. And perhaps you can tell the listeners who you are, what you do, and then about Camp Agape.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you, and aloha to all of your listeners out there in KKCR land. I'm the chaplain here at the Kauai Community Correctional Center. That's my full-time regular job. And my passion, my heart, is for this organization called Camp Agape Kauai, and I'm the president of the board of directors there and also the chaplain. So Camp Agape is a camp that's 4 days long, and it's totally free for children of incarcerated parents. So any parent who's been in jail within the last few years or currently in jail, anywhere in the mainland, here on Hawaii, everywhere, if they have children who are here on Kauai, we invite them to come to this camp, and we put out an invitation to them earlier in the year, and then we follow up with them, trying to get them registered and everything. But they get 4 days of just this agape, which is the Greek word for God's unconditional love. And so we try to share love unconditionally with these children who come from very dysfunctional backgrounds many times, or from a place of neglect or just deep hurts. And so we try to show them love at least for 4 days. And it's unconditional. It's just 24/7 plus 4 days straight. And It happened this past weekend, October 6th through the 9th, and we were able to bless 60 children of incarcerated parents, and it's just a beautiful thing. We had over 20 local churches get involved. We had over 25 businesses, and we've had our county mayor and some of the hotel industry people get involved to help us out to sponsor good portions of our camp. So it's not just a religious thing. It's a very community-oriented type of outreach to these children who are really hurting children. And what we do is we provide this service for them in hopes of helping them to not end up in prison like their parents. So we're trying to do a like an intervention, I guess you would call it, or maybe some type of a stopgap measure, prevention method that we really feel is very effectual. And we do this by just loving on these children.
So when I saw 8 county vans, I thought maybe those were inmates in those vans. Was it just the kids in the vans, or did their parents come out and hang out with them? Is it just the children, or did the parents?
We had 8 vans.
Okay.
And they were not county vans. They were private vans.
Okay.
We either rented.
Big white
or
vans.
We borrowed from churches or individuals. So we pay for those on our own.
Okay.
And so they were all our own private rental or owned vans. And what we do is we pick up the children at 2 different churches, at Color Hill Missionary and Kapa'a Missionary. And we pick up all the children and we drive them out to the camp all together with their junior leaders and their leaders. So everyone had colored shirts
that
were all together. So there was like 2 vans for a purple team, 2 vans for a red team, 2 vans for a yellow team, and 2 vans for a blue team. So they're with their leaders in the vans, and there's a driver that's driving it. So it's really we start to build the team mentality. They get to know their teammates all the way out to camp. So that way it's already starting to let them know that they are part of a family, they are part of an Ohana, we call it an Ohana group. And so we try to make them understand the concept of Ohana real clearly by colors, just so that we can sort them, because once we know which color they're on, if they get lost, if there's a purple child with a blue team, we know that that's not right.
Okay,
it's helping us just to corral them together.
So something I might have got wrong. I thought their incarcerated parents got to join them in camp, but no, just the kids.
No, that's our goal. Our goal is to do that, but not to bring the parents off from jail to meet with them. The reason is we want the parents to be well. And so the one of the ways that we're doing that is by helping the parents to understand that there's a 2-year commitment to sobriety before we will help them to start to push them to come to this camp. Before that, while they're incarcerated, they may have a visit, to see their child, but most of the time we try to keep them separate. And the reason is these children are looking for answers. There a lot of times the parents have been the ones that have caused a lot of pain in their lives. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of anger and resentment and distrust. And so we try to overcome those things by dealing with our 5 themes, which is forgiveness, trust, love, hope, and prayer. So we teach them these 5 life skills so that they can start to see things in a different way rather than trying to see things from just a victim mentality. We try to teach them that they can become leaders. They can become self-sufficient to a certain extent so that they don't have to end up in prison like their parents. Now, because we just started, we haven't had that opportunity to have parents see their children while they're out for 2 years because we just started.
Mm.
But we have some inmates who are going to be able to do it next year because they've been out for 2 years as of this year. So those parents will be welcomed to come to this camp. And so we will try to reunite and show the family, the parents and the child together, because that is our goal. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it sounds like something that would be positive for the kids is it's just like when kids of people who are struggling with cancer all get together, then the kids can be normal with their friends. Because
right.
they don't have to pretend to be something that they aren't, or pretend to not have a big challenge. So when they all have something in common, then there's a sense of being able to be clear with who they are and
That's the whole purpose, pretty much, because a lot of these children are victimized at school or at play because their parents are incarcerated and other children tease them about that. And so they get bullied a lot. And so what we're teaching them is how to fight the bullying is by loving their neighbors and loving their enemies and forgiving people who have hurt them. And so that whole process is teaching them to heal and to be able to move on. So it's a full circle type of a ministry where, yes, I work with the inmates in prison because they're the adults. We work with the children through the Camp Agape portal, and then we try to reunite that. So the prison ministry and Camp Agape is kind of like a circle ministry, and we're trying to get them to renew their family commitments and the Ohana idea. And so far, I've explained it to the inmates in jail, and so many of them have responded in a positive manner, and they have said, we want to be clean and sober so we can be at this camp with our children, but more so we want to serve alongside of Camp Agape. So it's beginning to really catch on like wildfire. And so this Camp Agape started like 15 years ago in Oahu by a former inmate who was facing double life sentences in prison without a chance of parole for being involved with the Samoan Mafia. And he was able to get released because of technicality for the parole board, not parole board, for the victim not showing up, and the co-defendant got 20 years, and he was facing the same thing, and the judge, you know, by a miracle, cut him loose. And so he was free, and then he got re-booked again on the second charge, and he went back to court again and prayed for a Christian or a believing judge, and the second judge also freed him. And it made the front papers of the Honolulu Advertiser, and they really talked about a life that was changed. And so because his life was changed from being incarcerated and he found God in prison, he was able to come out and start this ministry called Camp Agape to children of incarcerated folks. And in Honolulu, they service about 200 children a year, and they have about 400 volunteers.
So this is a really naive question, so forgive me. And we are speaking to Chaplain Clayton, do you say Sue? How do you say your last name?
Clayton Sue.
How can people need to be sober if they're in prison? Like, to me, like, if they're in prison, they're not drinking or doing drugs, right?
No. They need to be clean and sober outside of jail for 2 years.
Okay, so if nobody in jail gets to go see their kids, ever.
We're trying not to have that happen because they are usually, in our jail, they have very short terms. We don't have any lifetime prisoners.
At KCCC.
We don't have any 10-year prisoners, right? So we have more of the short-termers. So it's better that they have to stay clean and sober away from drugs and alcohol when they get out. Because while in jail, of course, you know, they're clean and sober, but that doesn't count with sobriety. So we count it from the day they get released. And so if you know the statistics, you know, recidivism amongst incarcerated folks is really high. Even here on Kauai, it's between 60% and 80% of recidivism rate, depending on which statistics you use. And so between 60% and 80% recidivism is unacceptable. And so sometimes, you know, we say, well, we can't reach this generation, so let's look to the next. We're going for it all. We want the parents and the children, you know, so we want to stop that from both generations.
So even if they get out of jail, they don't get to see their kids. Is that right?
Well, they get to see their children, but not at Camp Agape for 2 years.
Okay.
Just for 2 years.
Okay. But when they get out, if they aren't being held away from their children for some reason, then they can see their children.
They can always see that's their children.
Okay.
As long as they don't have CPS involved or the courts.
Okay. And then there's also, you help run a prison ministry as well, too.
Yes,
Okay, well, that sounds like a good thing. So if people want to help with Camp Agape, I saw that there is a campagape.org, right?
Actually, no, it's Camp Agape Kauai, K-A-U-A-I, our island. So mm-hmm. campagapekauai.com
okay.
is our webpage, and they can get there. and they can click on volunteer. We've closed the volunteer program down because we've finished our camp. The camp just finished yesterday.
Yeah.
So we're not going to open it up probably till at least January or February of next year.
Okay.
And when we open that up for the volunteers, that's when your listeners can go back on there. What we will do is we will put out flyers and we will put out information. But what they could do is go to our Facebook page at Camp Agape Kauai on Facebook and like us, and they will we'll send out information on our Facebook page also.
And I'm assuming that children who have parents at either Halava or Saguaro in Eloy, Arizona, or OCCC or wherever else, it's not just KCCC children, it is children from
right.
any of the incarcerated community?
It's children of incarcerated anywhere, as long as they live on Kauai, because then it's just practical, because we have a Camp Agape on every island, the four major islands. So every island will have their opportunity to go to a Camp Agape. But if for some reason a child can't make it, like say a child living on Kauai couldn't make it to our camp, but they still want to go, I will do my darndest to get them to an Oahu or Maui or Big Island camp or even California camp if I can. The only thing is we need, you know, consent and everything like that from their parents. So there is that opportunity. We call it scholarships. And we are open to trying that. We just prefer that if they are children of Kauai, that they come to the Kauai one. And the only reason is because we have other children from Kauai, and they will begin to network with other children that even go to their school that they never knew were children of incarcerated. And so then they begin to step up for each other and protect one another at school, and they become good friends. So there's usually an older child and a younger child in our group. And so the older child kind of becomes the big brother, and the younger child becomes the younger brother. So it's really a neat type of a bonding experience, because now they know each other from Camp Agape. They will proudly wear the shirts of Camp Agape. You'll see these children all around town wearing Camp Agape shirts for the next few months. And you can ask any one of them if they had a nice time, and they will tell you all. They'll tell you they will not stop talking for at least a half hour about all the different things that they did. It was just that full. We did horseback riding and sailing and surfing, and we did archery courses and just amazing, amazing activities that these children were totally, totally just in awe of.
Okay, well, thank you so very much for all that you're doing, and thank you for calling it in to KKCR. And I look forward to being a volunteer. Can anybody be a volunteer?
Yes, anyone is welcome to volunteer. The only thing is they need to register, because we don't allow anyone with a sexual offender history to come to these camps because of these children.
Yeah.
So we do a heavy-duty screening on that. But any community member who would like to come, we welcome them to come and either visit or volunteer. We prefer to have volunteers come for the whole time, but the reason is we need that much help. But if they can only make it for one day, then we consider them a visitor, and they can come and visit and still help us out. They just won't be there every day to help us, right?
Right.
But so it's open either way, part a temporary volunteer or a full-time volunteer. And we also do things after camp, like we're going to have pizza parties and bowling parties and surfing outings and so forth and picnics. And so we're going to do those things, and so we're going to need help with those also. So if people want to contact us on Facebook, that would be the best way to do it.
Okay, so thank you. Camp Agape Kauai on Facebook.
Right, Facebook and or .com on our webpage.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Felicia.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity to share about Camp Agape Kauai and even the prison ministry also. And anytime, if there's questions or comments and people would like to contact me, tell them to go to our Facebook or webpage and leave a comment or question, and I'll be glad to answer their questions or comments.
Okay. Mahalo
right.
Nui Loa. Okay.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. So, Marshall, did that caller have a question?
A request for a phone number that I will let you know later.
Okay.
All right.
And then I'm going to play a song in just a moment, but we had a caller who felt that... I didn't robustly enough explain that the movie playing in Waimea is, which is called Food Evolution. I did say it is funded by the industry. It is There are films against the industry that are funded by people against the industry.
Yeah.
This is a film, you know, so this caller said it's a propaganda film, I think is the word, and felt that I did injustice in just saying it was funded by the industry. So can you look and see who's funding it?
Sure. Supported by a $5.6 million grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Cornell Alliance for Science. That's from Cornell University.
Right, which is a huge pro-GMO program.
This grant will help inform decision makers and consumers through an online information portal and training programs to help researchers and stakeholders effectively communicate the potential impacts of agricultural technology and how such technology works. So it's a project done through Cornell University and funded by Bill and Melinda Gates.
Okay, which, Cornell University is definitely promotes the industry, and I will take a little swipe at them and say they fund the, the people who flame on Facebook and stuff like that, you know. So write pretty snarky responses, but the snarking can happen from both sides, but it definitely happens from that side, too. So before our last invited caller, I was speaking about the houseless and what it is to be houseless. And we had a caller calling in talking about living in one's car. And, you know, it becomes a crime to lay your head down. You can't sleep in your car. You can't sleep on private land almost. You can't sleep on public lands. And so people are moving and moving and moving, and you don't even have to do something wrong, like not have the money to make your rent payment. It might be that your landlord's house gets foreclosed on, or they sell the house, or they shift over to vacation rentals. That's a pretty common piece. And then if you have something like a child or a dog or a cat, or sometimes it's just too much stuff. Like if you are a tradesman and you have a lot of tools, you have vehicles, you know, it used to be, I remember decades ago, I hate to say it, but you almost couldn't rent a place if you were white. Mm. And now it's hard to rent a place if you're from here. Mm. First of all, the cost can be prohibitive, but you know, if they basically are renting to somebody who just got it off Craigslist, who just moved over here, there's no social capital that you're risking by renting it to somebody that you've never seen before. And you can push them off pretty quickly, too, if it doesn't really work out. So I know many people who lose their housing not because they haven't been paying their rent, but because they have a robust life, like with children or dogs or tools or a lot of surfboards or anything that might be creating an issue. So this song is by a homegrown band called No Grammy, and it's called Crackers in the Sand, and this song is Park Ranger, so it's been played on this station before, but I think it is really appropriate.
And Park Rangers.
The Park Rangers are who you're running from the whole time.
Oh, right. Whose white car this?
Yeah. Oh, here, whose white car is this?
Oh, here come trouble.
Perfect. And they see your car.
Oh, that's Raymond. You know what, for me?
Morning, Park Ranger. Everybody run before the sun rise. You know that the ranger come. Morning, Park Ranger. Everybody run. If you got no permit, you meet the kind Raymond. If you got $5, pay the man at dawn.
checking permits on the end of the park before I'm gonna roll up my tent.
Quick, what if Bubba sees me? I'm on $5, you know. You think he let me slide? What, Trinity?
You got $5.
Quick, bro, I need him. Oh, shit, he wouldn't see me. Oh, I'm gonna stash my tent behind the tree. I tell him it's my brother's.
If you're sleeping on the beach, you better walk away.
Better run.
Rain is find your camp there. He will throw your tent away.
It's my tent, you bugger.
Everybody happy. When the weekend comes,
$60 won't market.
Don't age until Monday, and then good morning, Raymond.
It's too early, bruh.
Morning park, Asia.
What time you get up?
Everybody run.
What, 3 a.m. already?
Before the sunrise, you know that the day should come.
The sun's not coming up for 4 hours already.
Morning park, Asia. Everybody run. If you got no permit, you meet the kind Raymond.
Oh, I met that bugger 3 times last summer. Taylor camp already. I stay dragging my tent. Good thing that bug overweight, no can run. Glad ain't no more guns.
Oh, good. I think I went out distance him. What, brother? Look back.
Boy, his car gone.
Oh, good. We can go back. It's set up. Yeah, tomorrow weekend, a bugger never come. He stay over and drink beer like that.
Bye, Raymond.
Hey, see you Monday, huh?
Have a nice weekend, cuz. Aloha.
Aloha. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Marshall, did you have a caller?
I sure did. Caller was curious about, you know those houses that are just Lahui side of the post office there in Anahola that sort of haven't been fixed up in quite a while?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just wondering why.
Well, I have actually asked, and my understanding is, Scott, and somebody, an Akamai person could call in, and it's not fact, but something like sewage issues, like water. Yeah, there's 4 houses right there in a row, right. And I think it has something to do with septic.
Oh, okay.
So there's a reason that they're not done. I've asked before, and I might not remember totally, but I do remember being told, and I was like, oh, okay. And I really appreciate that song. And what I recommend just about anybody, this is just a suggestion. It's not a call for action, but show up in court. Go with a friend or just go. Like on Monday mornings, they have like the debtors court, the collections. And it's really interesting because if you get things in the mail, pay attention to them. Because somebody might say, if you have, I'm going to blend your guys' names, Jake Marshall, you know, that might be a relatively common name. And creditors can go after you, whether it is your debt or not. And you know, a lot of times these things are 15 years old, that kind of thing. And if you do not show up for court to say, no, this isn't real, or this, fight it. Like almost everybody who fights it, it gets extinguished, at least when I have gone. I am not a lawyer.
What kind of debt is this?
Oh, it may be that you know, didn't pay something at Best Buy. Maybe somebody says you bought a car from them at some point. Maybe it's a Walmart charge. Maybe it, you know, especially people with a common name, right? And what can happen is they can go after everybody. My sister was Deborah Johnson for a while. Her married name was Johnson. Our maiden name is Alonji. She went back to Alonji because Deborah Johnson was a nightmare name to have, because people go after you for being something like Deborah Johnson. And so when you watch what happens on Monday mornings, there's all this pieces of going in, and people who are representing themselves, it's pretty easy to prove that those guys can't prove that you don't owe them that money, that you owe them that money. But if you're not there, then it goes for collection. And it seems like the dog barking charges are going down less. But that is another, like, tragic story to sit there and watch. And if you go with a friend or you just go and you sit there and watch, it gives you a good idea of, you know, what the crime line is. And it's very often, it, sometimes drugs are pretty common in there, but it's not like they're hurting somebody. It's they got caught with something, but they didn't have some, you know, something like a safety sticker. They didn't have something that they were supposed to have. And many of these people aren't in good health. There's also a lot of people who get in trouble for sleeping in public. Mm-hmm. And they're not in good health, and they come up and they get these fines, and they can't pay the fines. I mean, if they had the money, they wouldn't have had the thing that they couldn't get on their car anyway. Mm-hmm. And then I've sat there one morning. It was almost like 1,600 hours of community service went out in the morning. And I was like, you got to be kidding, you know. How do people get it, you know? How do you go and be able to do it? And a lot of times if they are not physically fit, you know, that many of them are older and they have bad health issues. And like my friend that I have camped with, and I'm going to camp with again this weekend, has macular degeneration of the eye and, you know, diabetic condition and has trouble standing and walking. And, you know, it is that basically running from the park ranger and knowing which line you can kind of sleep past, but getting up before dawn and then having to move and then seeing, I've said this on the radio before, but seeing where trees are cut down just to have no place of respite for people who have no place to go. And when your car is recognizable, the ranger just sees your car and it's like, oh, there's Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then comes and is going to go look for it. So people are living like wanted, you know, like prey is what it feels like.
Yeah.
And so
sometimes I think I shouldn't have painted that rainbow on my car.
You're joking.
Yeah.
But for people who don't have compassion for this situation, I say, but for the grace of God, go I. I mean, I feel so thankful that I have a roof over my head and I have a car to drive and it's, you know, able to be somehow living within the level of what's considered compliance. But if you have a problem, you have a very serious problem. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Well, you know, I can agree more that the camping laws are way too strict. You know, it demonizes a person just for the basic, like, you know, I want to sleep. You know, it's been like that for, you know, forever. Like, you know, when the Okies came from in the Dust Bowl era.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they came and the grapes, I forget what
the
movie
Grapes of Wrath.
Steinbeck movie.
Grapes
yeah,
of Wrath.
Maybe it was that, but there was another one. Maybe it was the Grapes of Wrath, but you know, the police would, you know, get out of town, you know, even though they needed them, you know, to work. But, you know, I admire a person that's willing to live with little creature comforts and just, you know, it's hard on me hearing this, even though it's a really great topic and I'm glad you're discussing it. It doesn't seem like there's anything that can change this trend. Like when you know, of getting, being down on the homeless. It's really sad. Anyways, thanks for the show. I appreciate it a lot.
Okay, thank you. Thank
bye,
you.
Bye-bye.
And, you know, another thing that came to my attention by a listener is about even things like when you need to use a payphone or if you use call collect. Do you remember what that is, Jake, to call collect?
Yeah.
I mean, most people have cell phones now, but not everybody can afford a cell phone. And then so when there's a payphone, if you call collect, now all the payphones have been sold. They've been sold. I got a lift, look at the name of the agency who bought the phone, but they are $30.58 for the first 5 minutes of a collect call. So, and when you're in jails, I don't think it's quite as expensive as that, but like with the people who call from jail, it's through another organization that's incredibly expensive. And so people don't want to accept the calls from their friends and family that are inmates, so it creates more social isolation. And when we were listening from KCCC, if people have more than 2 years is when they're typically shipped away, and where they get shipped to is mostly Arizona. So that's a tough thing. I'm trying to look at the name of the company. I got to pull that back up.
And there's actually a contract involved there.
Yeah, they've sold the business for those phones, and so I'm gonna pull that up again. So
no, I mean the out of state incarceration.
Oh yeah, that's with Correctional Corporation of America, mm-hmm. and Saguaro Correctional Center in Eloy, Arizona. I mean, I think it's pretty decent environment inside of it. You know, sometimes people will say I move from the penthouse to the SHIT house when they come from there back to Halava, and then they eventually go typically to KCCC. But when you talk to the inmates, they talk about themselves like they're inanimate objects. They talk about themselves as a shipment. You know, there is a complete demoralization that happens. And so when I'm just looking at all these numbers, I really want to see if there isn't something that we can do to correct that. And I want to find out why we have this business of incarceration rather than save money and just solve problems. It's called WIMACTEL, which is WIMACTEL, Inc., is who bought the payphones from Hawaiiantel. So $30.58.
Yeah, it's almost like one of those nutty military stories about it, a $50,000 hammer or something.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a caller waiting, okay. Felicia.
Yep, I'll take it.
Okay, and you know what, actually, I wanted to insert that a caller mentioned a little bit ago that regarding those Anahola houses,
mm-hmm.
His understanding is because they're in a flood zone.
Okay.
And if you notice the one by the bridge, the new one is up on stilts.
Yeah, I can't even believe they built that there, though. That's like where there were some deaths. I mean, to see how much that whole area can flood,
mm-hmm.
I can't believe that anybody would build right on that piece of property. And yes, that's a very dangerous area. Aloha, you're... Oops. Is there another line?
Try that.
Aloha, you're on the air. KKCR.
No, we lost him.
Okay. You can call back 826-7770 and... We do have a fun drive coming up, and when you are a wave rider, and you don't just have to be a business, there might be many things, even like you're a nonprofit. It's a good way to support your fellow nonprofit. Well, let's see if this is our caller real quick before I'm going to go ahead and play it.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming fall fun drive starting on November 2nd. For a tax-deductible donation of just $175, a brief message about your business or event will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 14-day fundraiser. That's over 100 announcements. This is a great opportunity to promote your business or upcoming event and support Kauai Community Radio. Wave Rider forms are available at kkcr.org or call us at 808-826-7774. Early sign-up guarantees the most airtime for your donated dollars. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We really do need you. And even like this week, we lost another one of our longtime funders and startup funders, Tom Petty. So we are very sad to be losing that that friend of the station. But all of our friends of the stations are very well loved. And many people, like myself, are... monthly donors, sustaining members. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. This is Terry Lilly.
Hi, Terry.
How are you?
Good.
Hey, I just love that you're bringing up this camping issue here for Kauai. And, you know, I think it's really, really silly that anyone that lives here should be able to camp wherever they want to, whenever they want to. I mean, I feel like a criminal. I've been doing this around the island underwater study.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
I get out of the water at Salt Pond and, you know, Anahola and all over the place. And I'm doing my underwater movies at nighttime and daytime. And I just go to camp and I get harassed by the park rangers. I get tickets. I feel like I'm a criminal. I've got to hide from all the park rangers. And I'm just out there doing free studies about the environment. And, you know, I just think that's really wrong. I mean, you know, come on. Everybody here lives on Kauai. We should be able to stay on the coastline and camp wherever we want to, whether or not we're fishing, diving, or just trying to find a place to sleep. So anyway, I just want to thanks for bringing this issue up because I've been harassed like mad. And, you know, I'm trying to do something good here and just do some underwater stuff and educate the kids. And I get kicked out of my tent and my car and, you know, it's just there's something really wrong.
And I want to say I'm sorry for that. I watch and, you know, a lot of this is gentrification of the community as, this was earlier in the show talking about, you know, we have to really look at everything from the jugular all the way up, which is how the funding stream goes. And when we have all these really high-end houses that are either sitting there empty or vacation rentals right on the beach, they want everything all nice and manicured and clean. And the beach is like a public space, so then it tends that people can camp there. But
Felicia, uh-huh. It is. And the bottom line is that everyone that lives here has the right and the honor to sleep and stay on the beach, whether they want to, any day of the year because they don't have a home or they've had a problem and they need to just go hang out on the beach. Or like me, I'm doing an underwater study in Nini at 12 o'clock at night and I don't want to drive back home, you know? That's our kind of public space, and I just think that it needs to be open for the people that live here on Kauai whenever they want to use it. As long as they're nice and kind and treat the environment good, then it's just kind of public space for everybody.
Yes. It is kind of beyond staggering. I know when I was in my 20s, I would see families. They would have such a serious campsite. They had televisions. They had refrigerators. And,
I know.
You know, I mean, it was kind of really sweet. It was these huge families. And it's not that they didn't even have a house. They chose to go spend the summer on the beach. And that was part of their whole cultural history to do it. And
that's
and
what Kauai is all about. For 1,800 years here, people went out and stayed on the beach. They caught fish and they barbecued and they had their huki lao and everyone spent time on the beach. And it's everyone's property. It's public property. And no one should be telling anybody here on Kauai that they can't go spend time on the beach 24/7. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I know sometimes, like, I went to a birthday party at Anini, a one-year-old birthday party, and it was a young mother, somebody, you know, she's probably 20. But so she did this whole big birthday party, and there was two big guys who came and probably weren't born and raised here. But they came in, and they just mopped the food, right? They weren't invited, and they were intimidating, and we were just like, oh, my gosh. You know, so there are, you know, I understand where there are challenges. I've seen where people gut fish.
The thing is that Kauai is such a small island. I know all the park rangers. I mean, I've met every one of them because I spend so much time out on the beach, daytime and nighttime. Kauai is a very small place, you know. People know who are the local folks, and they know who are people that are coming in that trying to trash the coastline. And for the local people that live here, I mean, get this one. I got a ticket down at Anini by this new park ranger that came over from the mainland, and I was cleaning my dive gear, waiting for my dive boat to come back in Anini, and I got a ticket from this gal for not having my boat trailer behind my car when I was parked at Anini. And I'm waiting for my boat to come back in, and I'm cleaning my dive gear after doing a free dive study to teach our kids at school. So I understand that there's a lot of people from out of the area that may come down and trash our coastline, but the bottom line is the park rangers and the community here, they know the local folks, and they should differentiate somehow between the local community and other folks coming in that may not respect the coastline like we do. We love it. We respect it. We want to spend our time on the beach, and there's nothing more sacred in my eyes than that.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling in and sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. This is a subject that's very dear to my heart that I've never heard anyone talk about or approach. And I'm very thankful that you're bringing it up right now, because it is important for the local community.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All righty. Aloha.
Aloha. And, you know, like when we criminalize something as basic as sleeping, you know, where do you go? That's what I don't understand. There simply is not the place. And so where we are housing a lot of our homeless is in these jails.
Mm-hmm. And there was a caller, Felicia, who made the point that there are also people squatting and leaseless people in Kokea. And he said that the rangers are lacking funds to actually, you know, pursue all of the cases of people, you know, I guess, being where they're not supposed to be.
Well, I've watched that, and I think one of the things that is pretty interesting for me in being a part of it is that most of the people that I have become associated with that I'm following in their houselessness are cultural practitioners. So these are people with pre-contact generational history, and they are, you know, practitioners. Like, I want to say this past weekend there was the King Kamuali'i Festival in Waimea, which was a really great one. This weekend there is the Queen Emalani Festival. And I'm going to go to that, you know. And when I watch, like, what the people, so many of the people who are deep practitioners, the reason they're able to be deep practitioners is because they aren't deep practitioners of Western dominant culture. And so when they're not deep practitioners of Western dominant culture and they're spending time living a natural life, and, you know, it criminalizes them. And so it is a very difficult piece. So we're going to take another call. Hey, and I have on my note here, no big deal, but because he didn't get hurt bad, but there was a shark bite last night at Davidson's Beach. Okay. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. Aloha, you're on the air.
I don't know, but we've got
just
another
call. Okay, let's go with that one. Okay. Just grab it straight. KKCR, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Alicia. This is Joe. You know, this thing about our beaches and public areas, I think the state, as a youngster, I first 9 years of my life, I grew up in the Bronx, and we would go over to Jersey, and we'd drive down and pick any beach. I understand now Jersey Shore, practically everything is fenced, probably Marshall would know better than I. Everything is fenced in, and Jersey Shore you have to pay, or you have to only go to certain beaches. I mean, the more people we have, there has to be some kind of law. There has to be some kind of order, because, you know.
So, help me with that, okay? Because I agree, you know, I don't know
can
how.
Can you speak louder?
I said help me with that. I agree. Like, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is a challenge is there's probably double the amount of people on the planet as when you and I were in grade school. And so we were told when we were little, hey, there's going to be all this many people. But so what do we do? Do we only allow the people who are wealthy? Like, you see that in California, a lot of places uh-huh. where people have to pay to go to the beach. And if you have to pay to go to the bathroom or pay to make a phone call, where do you live if you aren't wealthy? What do we do with them? Do we put them, you know, in a box? I mean, what do we do? So it is a problem. I mean, like, I've heard people to say they go camping and somebody's killing the chickens and just leaving the chickens with their heads bent. You know, I mean, this show gets lots of complaints, like when we're not on the air. So I hear a lot of challenges. Can you turn the radio off, please? Can you turn the radio off, please? Are you still there? Okay, I might have lost him. Jake, have you been following any of those things? You understand what I'm talking about, right? What do you think about...
As far as the camping issue?
The camping issue. I know that it can get really kind of gnarly down in some of the beaches.
Yeah, I know it can definitely get congested. But like we mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of the people that grew up and were born and raised around here, it really was kind of a cultural thing where the family came together and you brought the rice and somebody else brought the, you know, the food or the fish. And you really got to, you know, hang out with multiple generations of people. And you got to know your cousins and families and aunties and uncles. And even if they weren't necessarily blood, you know, you guys got together and came together and, you know, and made sure you took care of the place and left it better than when you got there. But it's hard now because there's only a limited amount of space and there's more and more people. But I definitely don't think we should be... criminalized for going and hanging out at the beach. I mean...
Right, or like criminalized, like when people get criminalized for going to the bathroom. And like down in the county park area, they got rid of the bathrooms so they wouldn't have the homeless. It's like cutting the trees down so you don't have the homeless. You get rid of the bathrooms so you don't have the homeless. So where do you go to the bathroom?
Well, good question, Felicia. I'm sorry, I don't have the answer to that. I just wanted to pass on caller's comments. It was the same caller who had a comment about KKA earlier,
mm-hmm.
and then I missed your response because I was on the phone, so I'm not sure. But he said you might have missed the point a little bit.
He said
that his point was that the state is not doing their job because there are folks up there who are not maintaining their leases and that they should be extinguished, and that if they are doing their job in terms of people illegally camping, then they just as well should do their job in other regards in Coquette. I hope I have that about
well, right. I mean, and I might or might not have missed the point, but I have been up there and gone and helped to move people out of their campsites when they get that 48-hour notice. And, you know, yeah, something got broken in the lease. But almost everybody I've gone to help have been, as I was saying to that person, cultural practitioners. And it is a crisis for these people. And, yes, the lease is broken, and so what? Is how I feel. I'm not in agreement with the person.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess I've lived here too long or something, or I've inhaled enough of the culture. And when I get to know these people who are actually cultivating the lay materials in the forest and, you know, doing very good things, like, who says that it's not their forest? Why can't they live there? Well, and we could say, you know, all this land really was stolen from them, and because of this show, because people, you know, I get a little harshed on because of the strength of the positions I take, and I joke and call myself a recovering capitalist. Part of it's been my listenership in this show. As I go and I look at the histories of what happens, I mean, there are people that, you know, their families were burned off the land. There's all these documented stories of what's bad.
Felicia, so the caller actually had a different estimation of the demographic makeup up there in Coquette. I wasn't confident enough to bring that into the mix, but from his evaluation, it's not the people that you're saying. It's actually newcomers.
There might be newcomers that are doing it, and then I'm not seeing that. And I do. Here's another beef I have. If people get off the plane yesterday, do not come to the food pantry. If you don't have enough money to feed yourself, don't get off the plane and come to the food pantry. I think that is a little bit problematic. This isn't a place to come on vacation, even if you're coming for a while. You know, you need to contribute before you start to have your hand outstretched. And there can be that challenge. But the people that I am seeing the problem with, I mean, at least I'm involved in helping solve the problem, or coming to the rescue or whatever it is, not really rescue, I don't want to say that, but aiding a situation, is they aren't newcomers. They are people who have been here for very, you know, their whole lives and have a long history, generational history here. And I find that they are the ones that are gone after more. And when I go to court with these people, like one of them, he was basically arrested for having his picture taken by a bunch of Japanese tourists on a bus because he was wearing cultural clothes and doing a prayer. Now, I happen to know that individual pretty well and am involved in a number of projects, and he's part of the Namahoy and part of a whole lot of cultural aspects. And so he really was praying on the mountain, but because he got a picture taken, he had to go to court. Do we have a call, Marshall? Because we have just a few seconds left. Is that a caller?
Yes. Well, Felicia, I need to pass on something.
Okay. And then we've got to go for Jesuit John.
Yeah, we've got a caller holding, actually, okay, that I wasn't even able to speak to. So
they're gonna. I can't take him.
Okay. So, briefly, back on the Kuke'e issue.
Yeah.
Missed the point again.
Then they should call and come on the air.
Yeah, you know, okay. Another day. It didn't work for him. So his point was that it has nothing to do with the homeless or people camping in the forest. That it is that the state parks have leases with people that they are not enforcing. The leases are being broken. That these places are for recreation, they're for vacations, they're not for full-time living, and the leases are cheap, and some people are actually advertising on Craigslist to rent these out.
He could call in, or he could come in and we could talk about that, or he can educate me some way. That isn't the community that has been in my field of view. I don't doubt that that happens. But what I do see happens at the with the force of law is people who are effectively houseless and cultural practitioners. So that's the group that I tend to see and am championing justice for them. Okay. All right. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you, Felicia. Yeah.
Okay.
I should say, Felicia, a lot of callers, I was passing along, a lot of callers were expressing appreciation for the show today.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I was a little bit hurried, but yeah, a lot of callers were appreciative of the topic and the discussion.
Okay, thank you so much, because when people are afraid to come on the air, then I think, oh, I got the wrong topic, or people aren't calling in. But I see it, and I feel pretty passionate about it.
And I do apologize to that last caller we didn't have time for.
Yes. I apologize, too. Okay. County Council report, and then Jazz with John.